Hello, and welcome to the Cyber Sisters podcast. We're your Cyber Sisters, Allison and Emily, two cyber educators talking about edtech, pedagogy, and this week, the metaverse with Jesse Marbury. Jesse is a special education administrator specializing in behavior disorders and autism with a certificate in supervision of special education from Lehigh University. In 2018, Jesse was recognized as a Pennsylvania State Technology Advocate Redefining School Star for developing robotics and computer science curriculum for students with behavioral challenges. In 2019, Jesse became an ISTE certified educator and in 2020 became director of learning operations for a private school in South Florida. Currently, Jesse serves as a community and marketing engagement manager for ED3DAO, a global community for educators who wish to reimagine education in the world of Web3. Here, she oversees professional development, member-led events, and education talks about theory versus practice, addressing learner variability and student access, technology integration, and the future of learning. Jesse is a board secretary for ISTE Affiliates, PAECT, out of state region. We want to give them a shout out because we're always talking about them on the podcast, and project managers for their annual Keystone Technology Innovators, KTI Virtual Summit, also a great shout out, an annual week-long teacher development conference on emerging pedagogy and technology traits. Jesse, welcome to the podcast. We're so excited that you're with us today.
Oh, thank you. It's so wonderful to be here with you ladies on the interwebs. How are you today?
We are, I have to say, having a great start to the year. Lots of stuff going on, I think, with us, as with everyone in education right now. But we are so intrigued by the work that you are doing. As you know, listeners of the podcast know, we are so interested in these kind of technological applications in the classroom and what they can really bring to our students. So we're really excited to jump into all things augmented reality and metaverse today. And you're doing some incredible stuff. So we are just like absolutely chomping at the bit.
When Allison and I were coming up with these questions for you, we sat down and we were like, we don't know anything about this at all. This will be super easy to come up with questions for because we're starting from having zero background knowledge.
Well, and you're not alone, Emily. You know, with so many emerging technologies, that's one of the pros, but also a con, that we are all kind of at the same level together. Even though I might be doing this now, I'm still considered new in this innovative technology space, so we can all learn and innovate together.
Well, and that's one of the things that we're always saying, right? Teachers, we're just professional learners, right? Like, we decided to make learning our full-time job. And so we're excited to do some learning here together today.
And we would love for you to tell us a little bit about your journey, what brought you to teaching, and all of that fun stuff. Because I know you had a pretty unique program at Lehigh.
Yes. Well, I have to admit that I never thought I'd be a teacher or an administrator for that matter. I never thought I'd be here. Isn't that funny? You know, many of my current and many of my former colleagues, they always knew. And I'm sure you've had guests that have come onto your podcast and maybe they came from a long line of teachers in their family or they grew up just knowing that teaching was going to be their destiny.
And absolutely.
Yeah. Well, maybe were you one of those people too? Emily or Allison, did you always know?
I was much more in the camp that you're speaking about where I did not think that this was going to be my profession and have found myself very pleasantly surprised by, you know, the wonderful things that the teaching has brought me. Emily, though, represents the other side of the spectrum.
I do.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful. I think that's wonderful. When I was in grade school personally, and actually, let's be honest, into college and into my master's program, I thought being a teacher looked pretty boring. That should give you an idea of the kind of innovative instructional strategies that were being used and in my hometown in Maryland. Like, that should give you an idea. And so I never thought I'd be a teacher, you know. And that's to say that I came about it to teaching a little differently by engaging in children's theater. So I worked through college and I worked through my master's program to get myself through those programs. And in college, I worked for a children's theater program, and we were doing earth science shows, and we traveled to local schools, grade schools, and they'd set aside a whole day to work with us. And we held science workshops, but we didn't call it that. We called them acting workshops, of course, because we wanted to trick them. We didn't want them to know they were learning, if that makes sense. That seemed to be a great instructional strategy, and it still holds to this day for me, I'll be honest.
It is still a great instructional strategy. No, this is a game. It really is. No, it's definitely just a game. You're not
this
learning anything.
This is fun. Yes, this is just fun. And so we held these science workshops, but of course these acting workshops for each grade level in a school. So from grade 1 to grade 5, or if it was a middle school, grade 8 to grade 9, grade 6 to grade 9 or grade 6 to grade 8, however they chopped up their school. And as we were doing these workshops, we would sneak in, what is a biome, food webs, food chains, important vocabulary found in each of these science disciplines. When we're talking about earth science, we talked about ecology, you know, very important ecology concepts. And then once each grade level, once they were done with our quote acting workshop, we'd send them back to their classes. And in each of their classes, their teachers were given some curriculum crosswalks into things that they could do during the day with their students to reinforce the things that we were doing in our, quote, acting workshops.
We absolutely stan provided crosswalk materials here. Like, that it, you are doing some teachers some real solids there.
Listen, I have to say, this may not be a very popular opinion, but I do love to be told what to do sometimes because I have so much on my plate. I'm like, listen, if you just tell me how to do this, I will do it. And if my students or the teachers that I'm training, they like it, what the heck? Let's do it.
Absolutely. Well, and that's when you have people working together to come up with innovative ideas, that's when you get some of the best work in education, right? Like what I've always found really satisfying about education is I think people have in part misrepresentations because they think about, you know, in their own education, seeing a teacher standing at the front of the classroom teaching to a class, and it feels very solitary. But I think that all of us would agree that it really is a profession of collaboration. It really is all about sort of sharing and working together and the sum of the whole sort of being greater than any of the individual parts.
Yeah, and that was something during this child's theater program we worked through, because each grade level and each teacher didn't see the whole until the end of the day. And at the end of the day, that was when we did our, quote, play. And what the play was, it was a physical demonstration of the universe and the earth biome. And we invited parents and family members to come for this day-end celebration of science and of the earth. And each grade level, which represented, you know, the swamp land, the Serengeti, dressed as lions or dressed as fungus. I know that's funny, but it's so interesting to see how when you can move a learning experience out of a passive experience into an active one, that's when you really are getting at that beautiful bond, that beautiful loving bond that people have with learning. And that's sometimes different from school, because school is often something that people experience done to them. So as teachers, now, of course, we didn't call ourselves teachers. We were just actors, you know, but as teachers, our agenda was to try to reconnect to that active love of learning, because let's face it, that's the only way I remember anything.
Is by actually engaging with the material. I you cannot see my face as we are recording this, right? But truly, like, I'm sitting here thinking, like, where was this, right? Like, when I was
in just listening. Allison,
sounds like exactly up my alley.
Yeah, I'm sitting here thinking this, Allison missed her calling because this is the job for her.
Well, and I want to go back to sort of what you were saying about school being something that is done to you rather than something that you engage with or immerse yourself with. And I think that that comes back to sort of a theme that we've really seen in the podcast time and time again, that, you know, students think of learning or school as a place to come to be taught, right? It's something that's going to happen to them, as you say, right? Rather than it being a place where they are there to actively engage and explore. You know, teaching is something that feels like it's done to a person. I love that phrasing there. And I'm interested because, you know, sort of the thing that we brought you in to talk about was this idea of, you know, sort of the metaverse and augmented reality and how much of, you know, finding your connection to, you know, these kind of virtual spaces was connected to that philosophy of, you know, what really works for students is getting them immersed in an environment.
Absolutely. You know, and at the same time, this was going on as we were doing this beautiful children's theater program. I was volunteering once a week in a life skills classroom at a local middle school. So there I got to experience teaching in another beautiful way in that they were instructing inside community settings for many of the right. students. Some of the older students, the older middle school students had some job shadowing experiences that they were going out to. And I was able to go with them and observe and help in some of these work settings. And I thought, oh my gosh, so maybe teaching isn't as boring as I thought it was. You know, I really think this is where this passion in me developed for let's tailor this instruction to how a student wants to learn. Let's make it practical. Let's let it meet their needs. And I think this is where I started to get a bit wiser about school versus learning. As we're talking about the relationship between people in school and the relationship between people and their learning, that technology aside, being able to meet a student where they are and help them learn something, I mean, that's the biggest gift. And technology, which is a big way now in which we live our lives, is now a natural part of this beautiful tapestry woven in.
Absolutely true. 100% agree. And is a perfect jump to our first question, which is that we're going to have many listeners coming in to this episode who maybe they've had, you know, a little bit of exposure to some of these terms, augmented reality, metaverse. I know they're very, very hot in certain circles right now. But if we're a beginner, right, and we had a whole conversation pre actually recording about sort of being a perpetual beginner. How would you explain to a teacher sort of new to the profession or to a parent or even a student, right? What these concepts are, what is the metaverse? What does it mean to augment reality? What are these things that we're sort of engaging in?
So for teachers, the last thing teachers need right now is a totally new tech stack to work with. That means more training. That yep. means more oversight. That means more accountability. And frankly, that is the last thing that teachers need. And the last thing administrators need, last thing that students need and families need too. So what yep. they need are solutions to lighten the load. So when we think about what is the metaverse, here's what we're really talking about today.
Okay.
Today, we're talking about isolated spaces that you can find on the internet. Like, for example, Mozilla Hubs is a beautiful virtual environment that many teachers are already using. Mozilla Hubs completely free. And how do you create a space inside Mozilla Hubs? They have many templates to choose from. So you don't have to know how to code in Lua or A-Frame in order to create three-dimensional environment interactables. You can just choose a template and go. And these are the solutions, I think, that are most meaningful to teachers when we're thinking about, hey, what's the metaverse? But also, the metaverse is a place where our students already are. Roblox is considered a virtual world in the metaverse.
Okay. And a very popular one.
Absolutely. Children and adults, by the way, not naming any names, it's not me, but children and adults are in these places and they are earning in-game currency. So they're experiencing another level of ownership over their learning that provides them some immediate feedback in their earnings, their connections with other players. And in many ways, in my view, the gaming industry is really leading the way when it comes to how can we help anyone who's interacting in these spaces learn more and be better together. There are an awful lot of problems there too, because as you know, when our children come to us in our classrooms, you know they've probably already had a bad experience on the internet in some way.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So we do have some work to do together as students and teachers and families to help guide all of ourselves through these realms. And because right now there are some cutting edge technologies at work, no one really understands what it is or understands how to use it. That isn't necessarily a bad thing. In my view, I find that a wonderful opportunity for people like us who are looking for solutions to problems that exist in legacy systems like education. How can we open up ourselves to individualizing instruction? How can we open up ourselves to giving students immersive experiences that might be just too expensive? You know, I mean, right now I'm living in a coastal town and I could conceivably take my class to watch the hatching of sea turtle nests. I could do that because that's where I live. But Emily and Allison, you guys cannot do that and never
absolutely
could do
not.
That. So what, but you might want to provide that experience to your students. So what you might choose to do is say, hey, what's going on in Mozilla Hubs? What's going on in Frame VR? What's going on in Gathertown? What's going on in Zep? Are there places where my students can experience these three-dimensional or two-dimensional activities without us really having to go to those places? And so this is a long and protracted
description. But that's the point. I mean, one of the things that I'm sort of like summarizing, and as I'm listening to you, what I'm hearing is that it's treating in many ways, I think this is a natural extension of what the internet feels like to us on a regular basis. We already go to certain places on the internet and we call them places, right? Like a web page exists, in a space where we're interacting with one another. And when we're talking about the metaverse, when we're talking about sort of augmented reality spaces, what we're talking about is treating sort of these virtual worlds like worlds themselves, like places, and the ability to connect ourselves to different places, different people, and have sort of functional realities inside of those spaces, which makes a ton of sense to me and is something that I think is understandable to most people because we think about going to different spaces on the internet, right? And so what we're doing here we're making connections, right?
It's true. And I think what is helpful for teachers to understand is right now, the metaverse, they are isolated, as you were saying, isolated locations
yes.
that can be accessed either through a browser or through a mobile device or through, if you have an Oculus or other types of virtual reality headsets. So right now, what the metaverse is, all of these isolated locations. Now, when people are talking about the future of the internet in terms of the metaverse, because people do talk about the future in this way and use this word as well.
Yep.
What they're talking about, and this is really important, there is only one metaverse. And I say that because there is only one internet. So I wouldn't go to Etsy and say, I'm going to the Etsy internet and do something on Etsy. Or I'm going to the Zencaster internet so I can record my podcast.
Yep.
I wouldn't say that because the internet is the delivery system in which I can go to these locations. And that's another important distinction too, because that means that not one corporation can own it, nor should they own it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, once again,
this is something,
you can see me, but the snaps are happening. Snaps are happening.
Well, you see this played out right now in the media. The metaverse is not something that can be owned by a corporation, even though they try. I mean, Microsoft has quite a mighty catalog and portfolio of virtual environments and virtual worlds. They've spent, an awful lot of money on Halo, an awful lot of money on their servers so that they can run the milieu of offerings that they have. And they're wonderful, but it's important to understand if there is only one metaverse, then we all have a stake in determining this future. And so to give you kind of an easier definition, and here we go, finally, we're at the definition. Your listeners have probably punched out because they're like, she asked for a definition and she's like, blah, blah, blah. And I'm sorry for that. I did get off track. That was my fault. It wasn't Allison or Emily's fault. It's me. But I go with Tony Parisi's definition in his article, The 7 Rules of the Metaverse. And his definition is, I think, something that serves me as a teacher. The sum right. total of all publicly accessible virtual worlds, real-time three-dimensional content, and related media connected on an open global network. And that's the future we're working toward. Remember, right now it's all isolated. And frankly, we have a lot of work to do to make sure our students can access the instruction they are receiving today. So for teachers thinking about this future, quote, future of the metaverse, that may not be as helpful as thinking about, hey, how can I utilize an extended reality, anything, whether that's through a browser or whether that's through something like Quiver or iJack, which are apps that do augmented reality. They do that layer over your actual environment through a camera.
Yep.
It would be more helpful for teachers to think about, what is the technology I have access to now? And let's think about some best practices in applying augmented reality or these browser-based or Oculus goggle-based experiences. What are those best practices and how can they best serve my students' needs? So if I were to give anyone any advice, I would say start thinking about how you can use the metaverse with your students now. Allow them to experience some of these different activities, but it's not a silver bullet. Make sure that when you choose any technology, make sure that you're working from the students' needs and your objectives first. And you shouldn't lean on using technology if you can actually do it in real life. Like, for example, I wouldn't make my students go into a virtual world and see a sea turtle if we could just go there ourselves that day. I would just take them there, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. No, it absolutely does. And I think this comes back to something that, once again, we've talked about on the podcast pretty extensively, right? That all technology and educational technology is meant to be a tool and not a toy, right? When we're bringing something into a learning environment, this real, like, do we hope you have fun with it? Absolutely. Do we hope you engage with it? Absolutely. But it's here to solve a problem. And I love that one of the ways that you're really sort of thinking about all of these is as tools that are here to solve problems, to connect students to experiences of learning. Because realistically, that is how I feel like us as humans are designed to learn. We go out into the world and we solve problems as we encounter them. And our brains and our society are really well set up to have us learn how to solve problems intrinsically. You can always tell, how bright students are when you look at the kinds of things that they will create in their downtime, when they are interested, when they are sparked, when they are genuinely curious about something, versus when you're watching them complete a behavior in a classroom for compliance. And I do think that what's interesting about some of these tools is it opens up for teachers, right? Some aspects of learning that can spark curiosity, because I do think that is one of the greatest things that we can tap into as educators to help move students forward.
And I really like how our national conversation is moving away from technology as an add-on and more about how technology is a beautiful part of our lives if we have access to it. And if we don't have access to it, how can we seek out those resources in order to make that access happen? And I think we've been seeing, particularly now with the coming together of ISTE and ASCD, is such a beautiful symbol of how technology is no longer an add-on. It is not even a value add. It is a utility, much like we should have access to food and water, much like we should have access to internet. It's becoming a part of how we must navigate and survive together. And through both of these organizations throughout my career, I have received some really wonderful advice and guidance. And I just can't wait to see what they are going to offer next for us as administrators and educators, or those who wish to help teachers and students connect more and more.
Absolutely. I really do hope to see, I think, both in our national conversation and also inside of organizations like the ones that you're discussing here, really things to address that technology gap. Because I think working at, you know, a cyber school for many, many years now, I have really seen for many students what having a computer in the home for the first time does, not just for a student, but for an entire family. It connects them to a world of resources and community. And, you know, as you've sort of, you know, very, very carefully said earlier in this podcast, right, that this is a frontier in many ways. And there are things about sort of the technological landscape and the cyber landscape that are not perfect. But I do think that those are solvable problems in humanities long term, and the ability to connect with people should be something that is a human experience that we should all have a right to. Absolutely.
I think, too, it's okay and very important to be suspicious.
Yeah.
Of some new, quote, innovative way to engage students without first having some sort of peer feedback or some sort of peer vetting. It is normal and natural to be reticent to expose your students to something that isn't quite baked yet. But I have to say that extended reality, it's not going away anytime soon. And for teachers who are out there thinking, you know, how can I do this? You know, maybe you're ready to go and thinking, wow, how can I do this? Maybe there are some other teachers out there who are thinking, I have so many needs to meet with my students. How can I possibly do this? Meaning, how can I fit this in? And I am one of those teachers too. You know, remember, my background is in special education, in special education supervision, and there are some vast deficits in basic skills, basic numeracy, basic literacy. And here's what I have found. The more that you can bring a student into active learning, the greater the gains. The more that you can provide more practice turns and feedback, the more that you can make it fun, the greater the learning gains. So if you're someone who's thinking, I want to be innovative, but I feel guilty because I'm not teaching them the other things they really do need, Understand that both of these can happen at the same time. And it's never a mistake to provide access to these innovative technologies that are pervasive and not going away, and that they will most likely need to understand when they're adults. That's never, never a mistake.
So I totally get this idea of like why this is important and what it is. But I know something that I'm always thinking about when we're talking about like just sending kids into virtual worlds, which could be because I don't fully understand it, is how do we make sure the kids are safe? And I know like safety's popped up a lot with like the whole Roblox situation. So obviously if we're doing things in our classroom, we're not just sending them to Roblox, but like, how do we make sure that the kids are safe and they're not gonna be approached by unknown actors?
Now, this is a really great question, because much of our research and much of our encouragement from many teaching organizations is the more access you can give to students to a wider community, a more meaningful and authentic community, the better the learning experience. That was one of the reasons why I don't know if you all know Seesaw or have used Seesaw before.
Yes. Yep.
But Seesaw, oh, you do. Oh, good. Okay. I don't know if your listeners have a lot of experience with Seesaw, but there are others like ClassDojo, Google Classroom too, to a certain extent, where you can have activity. Now, go with me here, because it is not a three-dimensional world, but it does have the interactivity that must be monitored. and cared yes. for. Because if you are posting, for example, with Seesaw, if you're posting a class code on your wall, anyone can walk by and scan that thing. So you need to be careful, especially when you're working with students who are protected federally. If they're a child who is receiving special services because of a 504 or because of an IEP, you have to make double sure in those cases that this information isn't released at all. There are some additional protections, not to mention the protections for federally for 13 and under.
Yes. Yes.
Right.
So with that being said, the reason why I'm using Seesaw is I'm hoping that, you know, you and your beautiful future listeners and listeners now, they have had an experience
to be complimented.
Where they've had an experience where they had to first prepare themselves to understand what the interaction portion is. They have to understand a little bit about the settings. How do you invite families in? If that's part of, for example, Seesaw, that's the point. You would want to invite families in to see the work of their children. You also have some other options too. You have options like, do you want the students in your class to see each other's work or do you not? You can toggle that switch off in Seesaw where students cannot see each other's work. Instead, it's only a one-way path between teacher, student, and family, or whom, you know, whoever is in that small circle. But if you want greater sharing, you have that option. So for teachers who are thinking about, hey, is this new tool right for my students and right for my school? Please, I beg you all, please follow your school's recommendations. Everyone's privacy policies, they're different. Some schools are pretty okay with using something like a Zep or something like a GatherTown. Other schools are not, because even though in these places, these virtual worlds, Zep is a virtual world. I apologize for not explaining that a little more fully. But Zep is a virtual world where you can interact in a two-dimensional space as an avatar, and you have audio and video just like you would in a Zoom, but you are interacting in this game-like environment together, and you can move around. What you have to be careful of is in these virtual worlds, while students don't necessarily have to, quote, create an account to go to the space, there is an option for students to do that. And for some schools, just having the option of a child creating an account is a step too far.
True.
So
very true.
In my view, thinking about how students can stay safe, in my view, it has to happen in small pods, in small beta test groups, in order for teachers and students and families to understand how it can be useful, and then understand how they can help change some of these privacy policies in order to accept that into their ecosystem. And it's a slow process that shouldn't be ignored. Now, you might be working for a school, and I have in the past worked for smaller private organizations where they don't have very many restrictions. And in those cases, you are afforded something a lot of teachers in larger districts don't have, and you're afforded time. You're afforded a little bit of time to understand the tool and its use. I hope I haven't drilled on about this. I hope.
Oh, no. I think that this is, listen, when you talk about doing something new, and I'm actually sitting here in the middle of this episode, Emily, like actively changing our season a little bit. I'm wondering if this should be a legitimate try it for us. Because I'm hearing a lot of these things and I just like want to get my hands like in them immediately and like start pushing buttons and trying different things. So things for us to consider after we finish recording. One of the things that we always do is talk about, you know, the process. We do these things called try-its on our episodes where we'll go out and we'll try a new piece of ed tech. And there is some hygiene that goes along with introducing anything new to the students. And what I love in what I'm hearing from you, Jesse, is that this, you know, concept, right, of, you know, connecting students through the metaverse is just like any other piece of ed tech. You have to know your community, right? You have to know your school's policy. You have to know the kinds of things that your community is going to buy into and what might be a step too far for them, and they may need some coaching and some coaxing to try out something new inside their educational spaces. You're going to have to teach students how to interact in these worlds, right? You're going to have to go through. I'm in a process right now of sort of really, it can be a brutal process sometimes, right? But it is one that is ultimately really good, of teaching students how to comment on one another's posts. Now, I'm not doing it in Seesaw, though that is one that our district has available to us. I'm doing it in another program. But let me tell you, they have to be taught how to interact with each other and yes. understanding, you know, this is, you know, a virtual reality space that we're going to be interacting with us. And there's more capacity for us to have interactions, which is great for learning. But also, you have to think about the pedagogy of that. How are you going to train students through that? And then finally, understanding the tool, the settings, making sure that things are FERPA compliant, making sure you really understand that back end. But a lot of that stuff is stuff that I think companies are more and more transparent about. They understand the need for flexibility. They understand the robust need for school districts. And at least what we found with so many ed tech companies is that if you go to them and say, hey, I really need to know this information, or I don't see this setting here, and my district won't be able to use your product as a result, I've been floored by how quickly you will get responses, sometimes how quickly people will make adjustments. So really, this is an industry that's very responsive. But you know, all of these different things we're talking about here, ZEP, GatherTown, you know, some of these different things here, I'm sort of looking here, researching as we're going through our episode, very, very similar, right? It's going to be the same policies, the same procedures, the same hygiene that you would use introducing any other kind of ed tech to your classroom.
Yeah, I think, and Emily, just to more further add what Allison was saying, and hopefully to bring more clarity to the answer to your question, last year, from October to March, this was right after a lot of closures, or right around the height, you know, of closures and pandemics. I was part of the K-20 Virtual World Building Fellowship, and there were seven educators at that time. I was a director of learning operations at a small private school, and what we were doing is we were engaging in action research to understand how to use virtual worlds in education. And from those tips and the tricks that we learned, we wanted to develop new ideas, and we want to develop concepts about how learning can advance, you know, through this technology. One of the things that we learned about safety is it's something that must be designed into the experience. It cannot be inspected into the experience. So what do I mean by that? That when you are designing a learning experience around anything, technology included, you must at first design for that safety piece. So, for example, the classroom agreements that we had in person became agreements that we had when we entered into these virtual worlds. These agreements were explicitly taught to students. Then these agreements were modeled for students when we were inside these virtual worlds. Then we supported the students in interacting like that in virtual worlds before we even started talking about, hey, let's learn here together, which adds another level of complexity, or even yet another deeper and more interesting level of complexity. Let's build in these spaces. And here's what we found when we did that. We really had a beautiful understanding with what the student could do, what the student was comfortable doing, and a beautiful understanding with the family as well, because we wanted the family to be a part, the families, I should say, to be a part of this experience with us as we were engaging in our action research. So we did try to address that as head on as possible. And then we tried to choose virtual spaces that were closed or private, in that we weren't entering into a large MMO game together. We were entering into these smaller private spaces. But, you know, Emily, what you say is true, because as we were working with older students, let me tell you what we found. We found that we had to detrain some rather naughty behaviors because they had learned them together in these other, you know, in these other gamified environments that were connected, sometimes with the US server, sometimes with servers all over the world. So we did have to tackle that head on. And as long as we were open and honest and we addressed things as they came up, and we tried to design experiences with this in mind, but it can't be perfect all the time. We had already designed into these experiences, hey, when something happens, here's our procedure together to deal with it. And we took that on a case-by-case basis using, when I say procedure, it was more like a mindset, if you will.
I hope and that like, makes sense. Yeah, no. And I know that, like, I know Allison said, like, talking about, like, let's see if we can do this as a try too. And I know that's where I could foresee a lot of districts having issues with these, with just being like, how do you make sure it's FERPA compliant and COPA compliant and all of that? And obviously, anytime you're doing anything online that potentially a student could interact with the general public, for lack of a better term, that turns into, you know, all of those, opens all of that bag of worms. So I was thinking that was good information for both us as we further explore this and anybody else whose district is very strong on those things. For
and
sure.
I really appreciate, I know these policies can be a real thorn in the side of people who want to be innovative, but I really do believe in solid privacy practices and policies. I believe in it. I'm telling you, working with children, especially children who are as vulnerable, children with special needs, you know, there is, in my mind, as a teacher and an administrator, I have a greater calling to really protect some of the most vulnerable students under my charge. So I better, you know, I better know this and be prepared and just tackle it head on, just to, you know, just for me, so I could sleep at night.
Right. Yeah. And obviously, as a podcast, like, we're not advocating anything that is dangerous. Like, we want to keep everybody safe too.
absolutely no. And I really appreciate you asking. That's the first thing, you know, that's the first thing that when I was director, that's the first thing my executive director asked me. He's like, all right, lay this out for me. How can this work with our policies? Like, lay this out for me. And it's very wise. Would you ladies be interested in some more of our Think Tank insights about using virtual worlds?
That was exactly what I was sort of thinking into next. I had, you know, some notes written down here. I'm really interested in using virtual worlds, practical applications for our classroom, because in many ways, I love the example that you started out with, right? Talking about this sort of theater experience where everyone is working together to be able to essentially create an augmented reality in their own school, right? Like, it is not the reality of a bog, but we're acting out that ability to interact and to understand it more intimately. And so I'm really interested in, you know, one, what you were able to come up with as a group, because once again, you know, as educators, we need to steal ruthlessly and really come up with great ideas, work together, collaborate. And so I'm super interested there, but also for teachers who are hearing this and are saying, you know, I really want to jump in. This is the kind of thing that excites me and I think would really make for such a great addition to our classroom. I think especially for us as cyber educators, right? We're always looking for ways to make our classroom into those kind of spaces. And it sounds like you have a lot of great solutions for that. So we're excited to hear some practical applications.
Oh, wonderful. Okay, well, I'll share two things with you. I will share what we came up with during our action research, some of the insights that we had. And I'll also share another beautiful publication by Meridian Treehouse about using the metaverse in education. And they have some beautiful recommendations as well. And I'll share the high points. And in the show notes, I will place the link where you can go and download their entire Introduction to Learning in the Metaverse. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. So first, let's start with what K20 virtual world building think tank. What did we figure out? So you're probably going to put your palm on your forehead because you know this, but did you know that students are more likely to collaborate in a low camera or camera free environment if you have to use cameras? I know. Duh, but it's true. When we were able to use environments where students themselves were able to collaborate as avatars and educators could view or watch what was happening, it's camera unnecessary. I see you participating. I it's okay. Leave it off then. You know, like, and this really answers a lot of problems, particularly with quote Zoom school or camera fatigue. This really cut out a lot of problems right there. Environments are most effective when students have an exploration period. I know it's another hand on the forehead moment, but keep that in mind whenever you're introducing anything new, much less a place like this. And the need for that exploration, it does reset if you're adding any complexity to the tasks or more students are invited and they enter into the space. So you do need to plan that time in advance to get that, you know, to get that going. Experiences are most effective. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Emily.
Oh, I was just going to say that reminds me of like when I was working with my elementary kiddos, and whenever we would get out the manipulatives, we always would be like, okay, 3 minutes to just, maybe even less than that, 3 minutes to just play with the base 10 blocks. And we would set a timer, play with the base 10 blocks. Okay, now that you've played with them, now let's use them for actual learning.
No, absolutely. And here's another thing too. I mean, it's important, I think, that teachers try it first themselves, you know? I mean, 64% of students with disabilities from ages 6 to 21, they spend at least 80% of their time educated in general education classrooms. And so what that means is that teachers who may not be special education certified, they are working with a team. Maybe they have a speech and language pathologist they're working with. Maybe they have another certified special educator they're working with. They've got co-teachers or a teaching team that guide their practice. So one of the recommendations we put forward is, hey, get into one of these template spaces from a virtual world of your choice, be it Mozilla Hubs or GatherTown or whatever fits your needs, like your privacy practice needs, and explore with your teaching team. And let me tell you, the recursive innovation that can happen in that environment as you're thinking, I would like to apply this in doing something with my students that I know is too expensive. We can't go to this location. Let's get in here as a team and let's figure out, is this going to be something that will work for that particular objective, if that makes sense. And you know, virtual worlds, they offer inherent opportunities for student collaboration and high rates of feedback from peers. And we know how huge that is in improving learning outcomes.
Absolutely true. I think we've had some really wonderful literature come out, I think, especially through the Hattie research that's been, you know, so popular recently, that really does show how important that collaboration between students is, and the ability to kind of give spaces where students are able to take ownership, right? That ownership is such an important component of that learning experience. And I love what you talk about also in terms of sort of the community building aspect, that it really is something where anytime a new person sort of enters the community or you're in a new space, having that time in that space to kind of get comfortable with it is such an important part of that process, because it changes dynamics as we're moving through.
No, that's really true. And I mean, one of the final tips that we were able to uncover, and this is, again, not new, make sure that you are using a clear pedagogy already in your classroom. And as you enter into these virtual spaces, these are some things that could occur in those spaces and should be occurring in those spaces. Co-teaching, for example, you know, effective co-teaching involves small groups learning with each other. Perhaps there's a teacher leading a small group at the same time while also affording independent collaboration between the other students. You know, you can consider templates or create maps to facilitate this practice, or even using the gradual release of responsibility model, you know, utilizing a virtual environment during the WeDo phase, you know, allows teachers and other students and technology to provide the corrective feedback and models of success immediately and at high rates within an engaging environment. And that's so important. We want to develop independent learners. And the more learners can cue each other, the more the environment can cue that learning, it helps us as adults kind of get out of the way to reduce that learned helplessness that we see many of our students, whether they're served with a 504 or an IEP or not, will often develop that reliance to learn or to engage in school that reliance on adults. So this is one of the greatest diamonds, if you will, about trying to learn or learning in these spaces.
It's one of the reasons that I've often come back to games as inspiration for building pedagogical experiences, is because you think about, you know, students and their relationship to many different kinds of game spaces and the resilience that they will show trying to figure out the first level of a game where they are likely failing at a very high iterative rate over and over again. And really taking on that desire to learn and to figure things out and to problem solve. And then you'll look at similar experiences inside of learning environments where there isn't an expectation, right, that the iterations are going to be as fast, that the feedback is going to be as meaningful, or that there is a teacher there and it's the teacher's job to sort of lead me through a particular experience, right? And this seems like a great way to kind of bridge that gap a little bit. It's an educational environment. And, you know, what you're talking about in terms of good pedagogy is good pedagogy, right? All three of those things that you mentioned, you said, none of this should surprise any educator, right? Like, we should all be sitting here, you know, sort of wiping our brows saying, phew, you know, education is still education. It's just another place. It's just a new environment to be doing that kind of stuff. But the old rules, right, they really do still hold true, just bringing them into a new environment. And one where maybe some of those preconceived notions that a student may have about what education is supposed to look like, those old biases, we might be able to shake those up a little bit and create a more intrinsic learning experience as they are also discovering this new world.
I have such a beautiful insight to share with you about shaking up experiences. I won't go there right now, but would I have your permission after I share about Meridian Treehouse to go there? Is that okay?
Oh my gosh, of course, of course. I'm speaking on behalf of all of our listeners right now.
Okay, all right. Well, I love what you just said. And I'm just taking a moment to, inside my brain, just, eat that up. It was so good what you said. Thank you, Allison.
Oh, of course, of course.
But the last thing that I wanted to share in terms of when you were talking about, hey, good pedagogy is good pedagogy, you know, yes, it should work in all places. And if it's not working in all places, it might not be a tool you should be using. You know, just let's just keep that out there. We know that using extended reality or using metaverse spaces, it's not a goal in itself. It's a means to a carefully thought out end, like anything else. But what Meridian Treehouse, I think, did for me is really help distill. So, hey, we've got a teacher who wants to, like, think about how they can use an immersive learning environment in order to meet a learner's needs or just gain some interest in the topic. Meridian Treehouse suggested an acronym to use to think about whether or not this tech tool is right for you. And the acronym is DICE, D-I-C-E. Mm. So it's just a rule of thumb that it might be helpful to consider some sort of extended reality, virtual reality, or augmented reality experience that would otherwise be dangerous, impossible, counterproductive, or expensive. Now, expensive is pretty easy to explain. I mean, everything's expensive in schools, let's face it. That's a no-brainer, right? We know that. The counterproductive one, though, is interesting because sometimes you will want to show students something that's counterproductive so they can better understand the impacts. Ooh. If we think back to about what we were talking about earlier about the, quote, theatrical workshops that were science workshops, we talked about what would happen if there were no bees anymore in the world. And the students were able to act out what would happen if bees stopped pollinating in order to understand the connection and the chained reaction that occurs when that might happen. That would be counterproductive to try to do in real life, though. You wouldn't want to do it in real life. But you might also be able to simulate that too in a virtual world. Maybe you're looking at erosion and why erosion control is important. You can simulate that or model that in a virtual environment. This also has implications in the workforce. Maybe you wanted to set up something to run based on the economics of your business and run models to see how X impacts Y. You wouldn't want to do it in real life because if you fail, you know, the consequences are dire, but you could perhaps do it in a simulated environment. And I think impossible is probably pretty straightforward. I mean, you want to go walk on Mars. That's pretty straightforward. And dangerous, though, is important in that, again, back to the workforce piece. So maybe you are training firefighters on the behavior of fire, and perhaps it's not something you want to do in real life, similar to the medical profession. As people are learning how to use new tools on humans, using it on humans in a simulated environment with a simulated human really does make more sense.
I think that this is such a useful idea, and it gives me as a teacher, right? I'm sitting here thinking through my curriculum, the things that I'm, you know, planning to do with my students this year. And I say, where are these examples, right? I have a unit that is all about informational texts, and it's all about asking questions, right? So we have the students ask questions, you know, why are polar bears, you know, white, or, you know, what, how far are we away from like the closest measurable star, various research questions. And I love that this could be a really great method to allow students to explore some of those questions that would be dangerous, impossible, counterproductive, and expensive, because when I ask them to usually generate the questions themselves, and they are, you know, very rarely asking me questions like, how do I bake like a sponge cake, which is like a thing that I could do in my own kitchen and like make an environment for them, right? You know, they want to know the big stuff. And I think encouraging not just our students, but also us as teachers to be able to say yes to some of those big questions is a great way to connect to curiosity. Now, I am so interested to hear, you mentioned that you had a particular connection piece, and I'd love to jump back to that and sort of hear, you know, that insight that you wanted to share.
Before you add that really fast, was also sitting here thinking too, we actually have, now that I'm not at a different school in, and I usually, generally speaking, go to an office every day. Our office has an augmented reality like cadaver table.
That's wonderful.
I haven't fully seen it in action yet. I've heard about it. I saw it turned off from far away. But when you were thinking about dangerous, impossible, and expensive, now, full disclosure, I know that the cadaver table was expensive purchase in the first place. Those are very expensive. But I was thinking, like, the students get the opportunity, like, and I think they use it in like the AP bio class or AP, some of the AP classes and the higher level sciences. But that's something that you would never get to do without the AR component, because you generally just don't have cadavers lying around to be able to look at the inside of a human body on.
No, it's very true. No, it's very true. Yep. And I can recall back in the day before the pandemic, back in the day, we would, as a school, when I worked for a small private school in Northeast Pennsylvania that worked specifically with children with autism and emotional disturbance, during the American Cancer Society Awareness Month activities, we worked with, I believe it was Dr. Ray Vollmer out of St. Louis University. And we did a distance learning lab where we had a cadaver experience. And he showed the students through this cadaver experience what a healthy lung looks like and what an unhealthy lung looks like, and how this accumulates over time. And for us, because we are such a small school and we didn't really have an awful lot of resources to go travel to these locations or be there in person, this really changed students' minds and ideas about, okay, this isn't just about a static conversation I'm having with our health teacher anymore. This is real. And you could hear students all in the audience go, ooh, I better stop eating those french fries. Like, you could hear them talking about, oh my gosh, some of our students were vaping at that time too. And they're like, oh my God, you know. So it really is impactful, these types of immersive experience. I would call that an immersive experience as well, because it was happening in real time. It was synchronous. And it was something that, you know, that we could see. And it was, I mean, thank you, Emily, for sharing that. That's so cool.
Okay, so now your story that we want to hear.
Oh my goodness. So, all right. Well, Allison had mentioned about shaking things up. And I know that teachers have an awful lot on their plates already. So thinking about the future of education may not be a luxury they feel they have, but it can be helpful when we're thinking about, quote, the future of technology. It can be helpful if you're a teacher who wants to bring in certain types of experiences because you see the trends happening out there in the world. And you're like, wow, blockchain is a thing now. Wow, immersive virtual, you know, learning environments are a thing. And we see what's going on in our market as a whole. We see a lot of large companies dumping in a lot of money into, let's take Balenciaga, for example, dumping in an awful lot of money into skins for a virtual immersive environment. Of course, it's Fortnite. But a lot of money are going into these technologies because they stand to gain and make an awful lot of money. So it stands to reason that as the market changes, teachers will need to prepare their students for these ever-evolving markets. So thinking about education, quote, the future, it would be okay to help students access more, hey, learn how to code. Because if we really believe that the metaverse, the metaverse as it materializes, is going to be a pervasive environment that people exist, right now, you know, these places have a lot of problems that developers, very smart developers, will solve and need to solve. So there's a future for students and their work. But I don't know if anyone is talking truly about how life-changing and amazing, and of course, with amazing, they will introduce more problems of their own, as they always will, innovative technologies. It's going to do something to education that I hope teachers become more and more aware of. When students don't necessarily need to rely on a building or a tax base to access their learning, this is a huge societal shift in how we understand learning and access to services can be achieved. And it can be a shift for the better. For example, we will have the opportunity for many other learning experiences to count, or to, you can be certified in something by not having, and you might not have to attend an ivory tower like a university or a trade school to get it. We're seeing that now already, people learning things off of YouTube. We've got Udemy, we've got many other platforms, Coursera. They provide upskilling for a free or low cost, and you can make a huge difference in your life and your family's lives. So the idea that we will be moving into a pervasive internet where people are going to interact, that also means people can have better access to learning. People can have better access to information and improving their lives. And this is huge, but with any disruptive technology also comes pushback. And so I'm not surprised that we're seeing a lot of pushback right now, because we are struggling under legacy systems that no longer serve the people who exist within them. And it's going to be a bit of a bumpy ride. But that's why we hope to bring in more and more teachers to these ideas, these innovative technology ideas. Because I don't know if you guys remember how they were describing in the 90s, the internet, we were going to surf the web with our keyboards and our and the mouse. It was like a surf show. Never did they tell us that I could be standing in my living room and ask a stranger to bring me food. And what? I can do that. And I don't have to be on my computer to do it. But it's the magic of the internet. And that's because it drew in many other innovative minds. And that recursive innovation thought of other new and amazing ways. And of course, you know, some naughtiness too, to use this technology. So that's why we are seeking teachers to get interested in this, because your brains will help this recursive innovation move forward for good, for the betterment of some of our most vulnerable learners who will become some of our brightest minds in the future.
One of the first things that I did when I went to ISTE for the first time, Emily and I got to go and do a poster session. It was one of the first big conferences that we did. And there was a really interesting discussion at, you know, one of the keynotes that we went to that was all about sort of the future of ed tech. And it was specifically addressing, you know, this idea of Could a robot, could a technology ever replace what a teacher really does? And what I loved in the, I cannot for the life of me remember who the speaker is. So I'm so, so sorry to whoever this is that I'm sort of like misattributing at this particular moment, said that whenever we look at something new being added to an environment, it only makes that industry increase, right? And he was looking at cars and the printing press and factories and how every single time we've added to our technological base, what it does is it creates new challenges, it creates new jobs, but it also creates a sort of vacuum for people to help navigate those industries. And I think ultimately, right, being a teacher is not a job that is about, I'm specifically going to try to get you to understand one particular skill, right? The podcast listeners have, you know, heard this story to death, so I won't go through the whole thing again, but I give a little speech at the beginning of my school year, every single year, that is about what we are here to learn, right? Why do we come to English class, right? And students have lots of thoughts about what they're supposed to learn here, but realistically, we are here to teach you how to learn. We are here to guide you through an experience of how do you learn, understand with, and interact with the world in a way that makes this society better, right? That's why we have public education. We have it because we want to live in a society that has the benefits of a populace that has been educated, not just in terms of your ability to read, write, do math, right? But your ability to critically think, to interact with one another, to work together, to solve problems, to make our society a better place, right? And if we think about where we're going in terms of our lives getting more entrenched with technology, the ability to understand those systems and to be able to be socialized to those systems, I think is really, really important. One of the pieces of pushback that I often hear as a cyber educator is people discussing things to the effect of, you know, what about socialization for your students? And I often say, I think our students might be in some ways better socialized because they go to school online. You're still going to be interacting with your family. All of my kids are on, you know, sports teams or there's lots of ways that they're interacting with people in the world. But through virtual classrooms, through the kinds of technology that we're using with each other, we're also teaching them how to write comments appropriately, how to interact with a person in a virtual space. What are the no-nos? What are the things that we don't like to see, right? How do we get out of, you know, situations that might be a scam or, you know, something that we don't want them to interact with, right? And teaching them to be socialized to these new norms as our society is changing is, I think, part of the role of the educator moving forward. We've always been, this job that is not just about a particular subject area, right? But it's always about sort of helping to shepherd that next generation into the challenges that are in front of them. And so I really think that a lot of this work, a lot of the stuff that you're talking about here, Jesse, is just so relevant to the work that, you know, teachers really are doing. I do want to ask our sort of most famous question here on the podcast. And as always, take this as you wish. It can refer to teaching sort of broadly. It can refer to, working inside of augmented reality or the metaverse in general. What is it that you wish you knew before you started on this journey that you could impart to, you know, a teacher who was where you were once?
Well, first I would say that teaching, if I were to speak to my younger self, teaching is simultaneously a beautiful thing and also one of the most exhausting activities you could do. And it's okay to feel that way. And I know teaching isn't the only profession that this applies to. Particularly in the human service realm. We love making a difference, but also it does take a toll. And it doesn't make you weak or a bad professional to say no. Not today. Thank you. If that makes sense.
No, listen, I am leaving the powerful pause there, right? Because I'm just like imagining a mic being dropped in the middle of it, right there. I think that this is something that, you know, we, Emily and I have spoken quite a lot about, I think, especially in the last year. It has been a tough space, I think, for everyone in education, right? For us as educators, for administrators, for students, right, and families. You know, there's a lot of change happening. And, you know, for us to understand that some things are difficult and challenging, because that's the nature of them, right? And we have to come in, you know, we talk about self-care in this sort of very trite way, you know, I think as a society, right? But it really is so important, because we want to stay in the game, right? Everybody wants a good educator still in the game. We want a student still in the game. We want a good administrator still in the game. We want a parent still in the game and active in this system. And I think that is a very important reminder to bring, I think, especially in a podcast like this, that is about something that is so far reaching, you know, that you are not a bad professional for needing to say no sometimes. You are not a bad professional for running out of energy or for losing your spark, you know, once in a while. That is a natural part of the process. And, you know, we need to do a better job, I think, as a system as a whole, of, you know, allowing humans to be the center of this. And humans are not perfect. We're not robots, we're not machines. we need, yeah, you know, the ability to take care of ourselves and to recharge.
I know Jesse hasn't listened to it yet. But I feel like that answer fit in with last month's podcast.
You didn't know it, Jesse, but you were a tie-in.
Oh, that's great. I'm so glad that you are tackling that issue head on. I think one of the greatest challenges that teaching is experiencing right now is the loss of some of its greatest and most competent teachers and administrators. Amen. Too. Yeah. And I will say this, everything does have its life cycle. And I wish someone told me that too. Everything has its life cycle. And if you are at the point where this cycle is coming to a close, that is okay too. But I'll say this also, that it can be a very lonely place to feel that way. Oh my gosh, I'm not doing enough. Oh my goodness, I couldn't go to this meeting because I had X meeting instead, or I had to write this IEP, so I couldn't go to the staff development, or why do we have this staff development anyway? Don't they know? It does not make you a bad professional. As a matter of fact, it makes you someone who is real, and it's okay to understand if you're at a place where it's not working for you. You know, it's okay to switch your position, to change your responsibilities. You can, in some cases, have some control over that. And this is also another controversial opinion of my own, but education in schools as a whole, as a legacy system, may need to weather the great flight out of the profession in order to really change what they do. And while I hate to say that, because I know many children and families depend on some excellent administrators and teachers, sometimes you have to start from scratch. And it's possible that education might be one of those places.
I feel like we started with this discussion of acting out the life cycle, and we are bringing it home to acting out of a different kind of life cycle. Jesse, it has been such an absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast. You just shared gem after gem, and we are so excited to see the reactions of our listener base. And I personally am like chomping at the bit to like really get into some of these different virtual environments. Where can people find you if they would like to find more of you?
Oh, absolutely. You can find me on both Twitter and LinkedIn. I'll place all of my socials in the notes.
Absolutely.
Come and find me. Now, is it okay, Allison and Emily, if I talk a little bit about what a DAO is?
Please do. We would love to share that out with our lovely listener base. So yeah, please take the floor.
Because I said we a lot, and they're probably like, who's this we? What are you talking about? Who's this we? Now, okay, so I work for a nonprofit organization that is also a DAO, and DAO. And what a DAO is, a DAO stands for a decentralized autonomous organization. Now, let me tell you what a DAO is, and then I'll tell you what our DAO does. That was great alliteration.
As an English teacher, I very much approve.
Let me tell you what a DAO is before I tell you what a DAO does. Okay. So what is a DAO? So what a decentralized autonomous organization is it is a set of procedures and protocols that live on a blockchain. And a DAO is an organization that is governed by this technology.
Okay.
Which means that if there are changes or projects that take place, there is a protocol, literally, both physically and also to, you know, in the magic space of the interwebs and the blockchain. They're governed by proposals and voting that are executed by technology. The rules of how things work are baked into this technology. And why that's important or different is that consider traditional organizations that are run by oversight boards, which are humans. We see an awful lot of fraud and other governance issues because humans are involved in many of these decision-making layers. And what a DAO does is it removes some of those humans. So you have a fairer distribution of finances and funds, for example. So if you're an organization that does philanthropic giving or you give micro grants to teachers, the way that's distributed is done through the DAO's code through a voting system that the members interact with, but humans don't necessarily touch that, if that makes sense. How am I doing? Am I okay? Are you guys like, what?
Listen, I am learning a ton today, so keep it coming.
Okay. So DAOs are fully democratized, where a traditional organization usually have a hierarchy of people.
Sure.
Voting is always required for changes. And now in traditional organizations, you could have some voting, but sometimes voting's optional. The votes are tallied automatically. And also oftentimes in traditional organizations, the votings are, they're handled manually by humans. And there is a transparency that occurs with decision-making in DAOs, because everything that you're doing, the decisions that you're making, are discoverable inside or on blockchain or inside the technology. You can see what decisions are being made and how things are being distributed. And if there is a problem, it can be addressed and the community can address it as a whole. And that's another valuable difference between a DAO and a traditional organization. The DAO is owned and managed by all of its members. So it is a flat organization. There is no one voice that is stronger or more important than another. And DAOs are in their infancy stage as nonprofit organizations. So there is still a lot to be worked out. But the idea is that DAOs can change the way, for example, other nonprofits do their business and can try to keep them out of trouble if you have all those rules kind of baked in. And what ED3 DAO is, and that's the name of the organization I'm a part of, ED3, ED standing for education, 3 meaning the next iteration or the future of education. We're a launch pad and global community for all educators. You don't have to be a K-12 educator or a professor. You can be a mentor. You can, anywhere that you are bringing new information to humans, you are an educator. Maybe you know people who mentor you. We want all of these people in our organization. And what we want to do as ED3 DAO is we want to catalyze innovation and reimagine education in the world of Web3, which is where all of these new and innovative technologies are taking shape. And so our vision is we envision a world where global educators are fully equipped to evolve education as the world evolves. I mean, as you know, education is a system that is very reticent to change, and in many cases is not serving its purpose right now. And we want to prepare the next generation of educators and administrators or teachers of all kinds to be more positive contributors to the workforce, to society, and to their own well-being. And what we're doing right now to do that is we are providing micro courses on blockchain, on Web3, on the metaverse, on some of these buzzwords through the lens of, hey, how can it be used in education? We are also having our very first gamified unconference. And unfortunately, it will have passed, dear listeners, by the time you hear this beautiful podcast. but I will place that link in the notes as well, where we're going to be talking about some of the most emergent concerns, like safety in these new technologies. What are some legal ramifications? And if you're a teacher, you know there are legal ramifications to everything that we do. So what does that look like? How can we better use this innovative technology to break down the silos in education and get the services to where it needs to go? And that's what this conference also is going to talk about. But as we look into the future as an organization, what we want to start doing in the next couple of years is we want to start incubator programs for micro schools. We want to give micro grants to teachers that want to try something new or different in their classroom. And that's basically what we are about at this point in time. So when I said we, or we talked about a DAO, a DAO, and you're like, what, huh? What is this? I just wanted to provide a little bit more explanation that we're real. We're a real deal.
Well, and for our listeners, we're hearing two other resources that are places to go to further some of this information, right? That you're a great place to sort of, you're offering courses and this conference, right? Which, yes, will unfortunately have passed by the time this episode airs, but is something that we imagine will recur, right? And is something that listeners can absolutely be looking for in the future. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's and we what have, I was...
Oh, sorry.
Oh, I was just going to add that Jesse is dropping all sorts of resources and ideas for you. She and I, because I think everybody knows right now that I do all the show notes. She and I are going to connect and we're going to get all of those resources for you in the show notes. And I'm sure she has more. So any resources she has for you, we will put them in the show notes. So you will be all set resources wise.
Oh, thank you, Emily. Thank you for doing that. And thank you, both of you, Emily and Allison, for having me today. And I especially want to extend a beautiful virtual hug to all you dear listeners. The fact that you have decided to join this podcast and give your most valuable time to some of these ideas, you are the one that can make the difference. You are the one that will change things. And we thank you.
Let me tell you, I feel like the listeners are going to be eating this up. This is great. She knows exactly what they want to hear. Jesse, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. And thank you, of course, also, dear listeners, for joining us on this episode of the Cyber Sisters podcast. In the meantime, please keep in touch with us on our socials. We're on Twitter at Allison K. Teaches and at Sattler Cyber. We always appreciate keeping this conversation going. Please like, comment, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And as always, dear listeners, keep trying hard.